Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party Network, home to lots of amazing and unique shows like Time and Space, Nerd Nuptial, Missing Frames, the award-winning Aggressive Negotiations, Great Shot Kid, Retro Perspective, which is now out on a Monday as well, and so many other kind of shows. So be sure to check them all out on thenerdparty.com, and you can subscribe to our master feed to get content pretty much daily. So welcome to our Glasgow Film Festival. We've come to the end of the festival. We've caught quite a few films between us and enjoyed some pretty awesome experiences at the Glasgow Film Festival. And I'm joined, as always, by Dallas King to break down our Glasgow Film Festival experience. So, Dallas, how are you?
I'm very well, very well. Not as tired as I would be after the Edinburgh Film Festival. It's basically up at dawn all the way through day after day after day. With Glasgow, it's a bit more tricky for me to get down, so I have to sort of plan like two or three trips, and then when I am down there I'll try and see as much as I can, but you know, it's more sporadic in my enjoyment of it. And but I think it's been a very, very good festival. You know, it was not affected by any beasts from the east or other awkward weather conditions, so everything went ahead as planned and I was very happy with what I saw. I think I only managed to see five films this year, but everything was either 4 or 5 star for me, which was great. What about yourself?
So, yeah, I caught 8 films at the film festival, and it was a pretty good mix of films I managed to catch, and I was really pleased with it. Obviously, A24 is something that I'm really keen on, and I managed to catch most of the films there. There was two that I had to miss out on, obviously 8th Grade and The Hole in the Ground, but that was a kind of choice that I made. That was like, well, Hole in the Ground comes out literally next week, so as this episode will drop on Wednesday, I will be seeing that movie on Wednesday at the cinema, so I'll catch that one eventually. But yeah, it was a pretty good festival, and I was really pleased with the diversity of the films, and I unfortunately had to cut my festival experience a little bit shorter than I'd like to. I'd kind of made plans to go to London with my girlfriend and family, so I had to call it a day on the Wednesday, but it sounds like we kind of, between us, we had a bit of a presence at nearly all the festival from start to finish.
Yeah, no, I mean, we both were at the opening gala for Mid-90s, which was Jonah Hill's writer directorial debut, partly autobiographical, well, certainly inspired by elements of his life, I think it would be fair to say. And, you know, I thought this was a great real film that certainly appealed to me as someone who was maybe not a skateboarder themselves during the mid-90s, but I was in my mid-teens at that point and certainly played a lot of Tony Hawk on PlayStation and, you know, enjoyed listening to the Nirvana MTV Unplugged album. So when those sort of moments came on, I was totally back in that sort of thing. And you know, it seemed to play really, really well at the opening gala. There was a lot of laughs, I don't know if anyone on this who listens to this podcast is a fan of Spaced, but there's a great bit in Spaced where sort of Simon Pegg and Jessica Hines' characters are watching these skateboard videos and doing the sort of moments when people fall off their boards and stuff like that. And there was one moment in this where there was almost like people couldn't believe the sound effects, the sound mixing and sound editing on this film is fantastic, because it brought out a reaction in that crowd which I have not seen for a long, long time. Actually, I think I know the last time that there was a reaction like that, and it was in the middle of Hereditary, and I'll leave it there.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think this was a real audience pleaser, and I was a bit surprised that it was going to be the opening movie, and I thought, you know, it's a kind of relatively short movie. Sometimes I think it's going to be a bigger name than perhaps it would be. You think some of the films of the past few years that have opened the festival, things like kind of Wes Anderson movies have tended to open them, so it was a real kind of gamble in a way perhaps for some people to pick sort of Jonah Hill's directorial debut, a film about a Los Angeles skater. But I think it was a really inspired choice, to be honest. I found it to be well acted. I thought it had brilliant sound design, some really awkward painful moments. I just thought it was a film for, I was a bit too young to kind of, for some of the 90s experiences. I was a young kid at the time, but there was certainly a few moments I was like, oh yeah, I could recognize and appreciate that moment. Oh, I've been there before. And yeah, I thought it was a really good way to open the festival and contained probably the most awkward scene I've seen in a film in a long, long time. But I'm sure anyone that's seen the film will know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, for me, that was the single most awkward scene at the Glasgow Film Festival since Annalisa a couple of years prior to that. And if anyone has seen both of those films, they'll probably be able to work out. We don't want to go into spoilers on this because it's not out in the UK yet. I think it's got a sort of, I'm not sure if it has got a confirmed release date.
It does, early April.
Is it April 6th? Is it early April, yeah. So we'll leave it at that and you can figure out, you can come back to us and tell us once you've seen it, you can let us know what scene you think we were talking about there. But I thought this was, I mean, when people think of Jonah Hill, immediately, I think probably the first thing they think of is Superbad. But, you know, he really sort of shows sort of great skill, I thought, from the writing and directing. There's a party sequence, a sort of house party sequence, which is really well edited, and his use of music throughout the film is fantastic. And, you know, it does have some very funny moments and funny dialogue, but it's also a lot darker than people are probably expecting. There's moments of violence which are, and sort of self-inflicted violence, which are really quite disturbing and shocking. But I think he manages to certainly find the right balance and the right tone throughout the film. And I think the performance of Sonny Sildrick, who was also in the Killing of the Sacred Deer, is fantastic. And he's got sort of great support from the likes of Lucas Hedges, but also I think some real sort of skaters who are sort of came on board to play the gang that he gets adopted into, really.
Yeah, it was a really good all-round cast, and I think this is going to be a movie that I don't know how many people will actually get to catch it probably in the cinema. I think it might be a short run, but I can see this being the sort of film that will have a real success on streaming or kind of picking up the DVD kind of cheap or something somewhere. I think this film has definitely got an audience that people are going to be looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, the immediate comparison I had and a few other people had when watching it was Larry Clark's Kids, but thankfully it's not as extreme and as an exploitative as this. It's much more of a sort of a warmer sort of nostalgic look back at a time that I think he captures perfectly. I mean, going into the film, you know, you're thinking it's going to be sort of, if it's LA in the mid-90s, you're thinking it's going to be sort of like hip-hop and sort of grunge and stuff like that. And I think it's an audacious move on Jonah Hill's part to have started. The first musical track on that film was Kiss from a Rose by Seal, completely throwing you for a loop, and you're not exactly sure what you're actually going to be watching now, given that that was the first one. That was a bit of a shock for me, has to be said.
Yeah, it was certainly a great way to start the festival, and that soundtrack has been played quite a bit. I think the day after the festival opener on my way to work, I banged out Kiss from a Rose, and it's been added to the running playlist since then. It was a good reminder of what a banger that song is.
Absolutely. Now, you were back across in Glasgow before I was, so what did you catch in the interim before we, I think we joined paths again around about Under the Silver Lake, but what did you see before that?
Yeah, I managed to have a full day on the Sunday and then a kind of couple of nights at the festival. And I saw four movies on the Sunday. One of them was out with the festival, and that was on the basis of sex to kind of kill a couple hours between a film. So I saw The Quietude, an Argentinian film that I didn't really know much about at all, to be honest, going in. Directed by a female, so that was something that attracted me as well. So, this one isn't directed by a female, ignore me there. So this was a film all about sort of an Argentinian family. The father has a stroke and the estranged daughter returns from France, and secrets and family issues kind of come out. It's a pretty generic movie. It's sort of a bit kind of made for TV style drama, but the two leads in it, who, you know, put in a really fantastic performance. I'm not going to even pretend to pronounce one of their names. Martina Guzman and Berenice Bijou.
Berenice Bijou, yes.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, I thought they put in really good performances. It's kind of a dark comedy at points. It has, you know, incredibly spoiled young girls in it. I think it was a film well worth kind of checking out. I don't know what kind of audience it's going to get. I don't think it's got a release here in the UK at all, based on the introduction to the film. But I think this is one that if you catch it, you're kind of going to enjoy it. I think it'll probably find a home eventually on something like an Amazon Prime streaming. They've got some decent foreign language features there. So yeah, definitely worth catching if you can, but it's going to be a struggle to find it. And then I went from that to something quite different, and that was Michael Winterbottom's new film, The Wedding Guest. So this, if Dave Patel is wanting to be James Bond, this is very much his audition. And it was a really interesting film. It's got such a strong first half. Dave Patel plays Jay. He is an undercover style hitman who heads along to India and to Pakistan to kidnap a bride-to-be and take her to her boyfriend. And the first half of the movie is really strong, and it was really interesting. I kind of was really gripped. It was tense. It has a very stressful soundtrack kind of ticking over in the background. And Dave Patel is excellent as sort of the quiet man, hitman in this role. And you're kind of gripped by the mystery of what is he looking to do in the beginning of the film? And then why is he kidnapping this bride and sort of their relationship? But the sort of second half of the movie is pretty weak, and it just doesn't have the same strength as the first half. So it was a bit of a letdown in the second bit. But for myself, that, and maybe especially for yourself, Dallas, it's a shame you never managed to catch this. It really captures sort of India and Pakistan really well. I mean, Michael Winterbottom, kind of very famous for doing the trip movies and, you know, touring around Europe. He really captures this film really well, in sort of like a travelogue style way. So you're seeing so many different parts of India, and it really covers it incredibly well in a way that not many mainstream movies have done, and it's really well worth checking out. You kind of get to see sort of the black markets and the alleyways and railway stations of New Delhi in quite a gritty and real way. So well worth catching if you get the chance. I think I can imagine this one getting a cinema release of some sort.
Yeah, no, must be quite interesting to see how that one would have played over the festival, given real life events of the past week and stuff like that, if it involves the Pakistan-India border. But we'll see. I think I do like Michael Winterbottom stuff, not always. There's some films which I've seen of his which I just have outright hated, but he's always a filmmaker who likes to, he never does the same film twice, or maybe apart from The Trip, but I'm always interested to see what he's got next, and I'm always willing to give him a second chance, because he will do something slightly different, as opposed to, say, Terrence Malick, who I always end up watching all of his films because of the cast, but I always end up hating all of them, and I know that I'm going to hate all of them. I try to go in with an open mind, but as soon as someone starts with a voiceover and starts walking barefoot on a beach or walking through a field of wheat and lens flare, then I just know it's just more of the same, and I'm going to hate it. But yeah, no, I will try and catch that one if I can.
Then after that, I caught Her Smell, the new film from Alex Ross Perry, and this was the absolute highlight of the festival for me. This was one I recommended on our pre-Glasgow Film Festival episode, where it was like, the synopsis sounded like, you know, I love movies about bands. You know, Vox Lux was one of my favourite films of last year. Green Street was one of my favourite films of Sing Street was one of my favourite films of a few years ago. Love movies like Green Room, Once. So this was going to be really up my street. So I didn't really know what I was going to get when I went into it. I knew I had Elizabeth Moss, Cara Delevingne, Dan Stevens, Amber Heard, and Eric Stoltz. And what I got was one of the most stressful films I've seen at the festival. So before I went in to see the film, the Dublin Film Festival was kind of kicking around at the same time as Glasgow, and former guest on the show Darren Mooney had seen this movie and gave it a scathing 1 out of 5 review. And how he described it on Twitter, I was like, Darren, I'm going to be honest here, you've completely sold me on this movie. That sounds so what I'm looking forward to, you know, the story about a self-centered destructive musical talent. Awesome, I'm in. And I loved it. And the film is 2.5 hours long, and in the beginning, the movie plays out very much like Steve Jobs, you know, by Danny Boyle meets Vox Lux. So we follow this punk rocker in sort of 5 or 6 mini movies, sort of just set in one scene at a time, sort of as things unfold in real time. And that was such a great way to tell a musical story instead of a biopic, which covers 20, 30 years and you've got to give a little bit to this, a little bit to that. They really give it the time, and it has such a stressful sound design. It has a stressful score. And I was sitting there in that first 20 minutes going, I don't think I can handle this movie. If this goes on 2.5 hours and this is what it's going to continue to unfold like, I don't think I'm going to be able to handle it. But it eases up a little bit, but you're always on edge, always stressed watching it. You're always judging these pretty horrible characters, and the situations they find themselves in are absolutely painful to watch. It's definitely going to be in contender for one of my favorite films of the year, and it was the highlight of the festival for me. Excellent, excellent movie.
Wow, that is glowing praise indeed, because I think it was Darren's tweet or something, and a few things coming out of Dublin, and a lot of people were quite down on the film, and I was wondering, okay, is this going to be it? And then I think your first tweet afterwards was just, you'd sort of said, you know, how you'd love Vox Lux and stuff like that. And then it was just like her smell. And then, of course, I later learned to read that as, yeah, it was exactly more of the same and that you'd loved it. But then I was like, oh, maybe he feels the same way and he's just been let down. But no, I'll be excited to see this one when if it makes it to the big screen and when. So, yeah, no, you've kind of sold me on this one. I thought Vox Lux was great. And, yeah, if it's something similar to that, then I'm in. And I'd completely forgotten it was Danny Boyle that directed Steve Jobs. I was like, oh, yeah, no, that's right, yeah. I thought it was Aaron Sorkin again, but no, it was Danny Boyle, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it really is interesting, and I'd love to see more films perhaps adopt this kind of style, and instead of trying to tell an entire story over a period of time, you know, I think this is such an interesting approach and really gives you a good insight into the character, and I think they too would make an excellent double feature.
Absolutely. Well, one of the films I saw when I went back on Thursday was a preview of, and now this was a late edition to the Glasgow Film Festival, and basically scuppered many people's ideas of what was going to be the surprise film, and this was Wild Rose, which is filmed and set in Glasgow and stars the star of the BAFTA winning Beast, the one that doesn't go for tasty debriefs, Jesse Buckley, who's also in Taboo, as Roslyn, a aspiring country singer, not country and western, as she keeps pointing out to people. Apparently country and western dropped western at some point that I'm not aware of, maybe when Taylor Swift kind of turned it poppy, but yeah, it's just country music now. And she comes out of jail and is trying to readjust to a life of sort of trying to raise two kids, become a cleaner to a upmarket posh lady, and sort of she's got this dream of going to Nashville to make it as a country singer. And I mean, it's very much sort of your standard underdog sort of learning, will she be able to do it? It's very sort of Billy Elliot-esque, sort of working class person trying to make a name for themselves in the arts when everyone else around them is telling them that they can't do it. You just have to swap out ballet for ballads and you're basically there. And, you know, it's got a bit of the sort of My Fair Lady, I guess, and the fact that she's very uncouth. She's always swaying her head off. She's very, and, you know, Sophie Okonedo's character is basically trying to show her how to showcase herself to the best of her ability. So there's a bit of that to it. But I think that this film, you know, I'm not sure of how big a release it's going to be. I don't think it will be anywhere near as big as the likes of like your Full Montes or Billy Elliot's. But I think in Glasgow particularly, this will play like gangbusters. And I expect, you know, it could probably have a 6-month run at GFT alone, because I think that people are really going to embrace this film, because it's Glasgow born and bred. And yeah, I think it shows the city and it shows the music in a very good light, and I think it'll do very well.
Yeah, I caught this film a few months ago at the London Film Festival, and it was a complete, you know, it was one of these films that was a convenient time in the day and I could go see something I really wanted to see after it. And I remember reading sort of the description and being like, ugh, I don't know if I'm really in the mood for something like that, but you know what, we'll give it a go. I was really blown away by it. I mean, it's nothing remotely original at all, but the performances from Jesse Buckley, they really had me kind of tearing up towards the end. And, you know, her character she's certainly not without her flaws. She's a difficult character to like as well, but you're so invested in her achieving her goal and her success, and it is an incredibly self-centered character, and it could go either way. You could come out of this film going, I absolutely detest her, she's selfish, she makes these decisions, you know, think of it like she's spending this money to go to Nashville, she could spend that on her kids, you know, they're not exactly, you know, cash rich, but you're like, but you know what, I'm kind of happy that she's happy, and you know, good luck. And it, you know, some of the cliches that you expect perhaps don't come off, but some of them that you do. And I thought it was a pretty lovely movie, and I can't wait for an audience to actually hear about it and see it in Glasgow. It sounds like it was an awesome screening. You know, people got to see Jesse Buckley perform live, and you know, you don't really get that much you know, extra with tickets sometimes, but you got a hell of a deal with that one.
Yeah, no, I mean, she can definitely sing, and I think she's such a good singer that the opening track, Country Girl, I was listening to that and going, wow, that's a really good song. She's really good singing that. That sounds like something. Wow, I'm not entirely sure what it is. And then it wasn't until the end when it came up with Bobby Gillespie or whatever that I realised that they'd done a country version of Primal Scream song. And so, I mean, that was a fantastic thing. And it's got Julie Walters in it as well, who's great as Jesse Buckley's mum, and sort of the reverse role of Billy Elliot, where, you know, she was the teacher and trying to get, you know, Billy Elliot to the stage. You know, she's the one who's basically almost, I was going to say piss on the fire, but yeah, no, basically pissing on her fire that she's never going to make it. She needs to knuckle down and look after these kids. They're her future and whatever. She's never going to make it. But then slowly she has a change of heart, and of course, because you know what's going to happen. You know, you've got all this stuff of, it's like Chekhov's postcard or whatever. You know, they say Chekhov's gun, you know, if you introduce a gun in the first act, it will be fired in the third one. It's like, well, she keeps talking about Nashville and whatever. If there's not a scene where she goes to Nashville, then basically, you know, this film is not going to work. So I'm glad that they did that. And yeah, I think it will find an audience. I believe it's actually screening previews this weekend at a country to country music festival in London, so they know exactly where their market is. But I think in Glasgow especially, it will play really, really well.
So I caught The Elephant and the Butterfly, directed by Emily van Beelbent, and it's a Belgian film, and it is one of these ones, again, it's not an original story at all, and it was a film that sort of conveniently worked in with me being able to see Under the Silver Lake. And it's the story about a dad who has been kind of cut out of his daughter's life. You know, she's only 3-4 years old. You know, I think four or five, actually. And, you know, has no involvement. She doesn't even know that he's his dad. And by a, you know, comical set of circumstances, he's got a babysitter for a night, and then it becomes into a few days. And it's all about sort of the connection between this father and his daughter. And it's really quite lovely to watch. It's when it got introduced at the festival, they were like, hey, we've got this young female girl actress, you know, 5 years old, but don't worry, she's not annoying. And it certainly isn't. She's such a charming little child, and you know, it's just like nice little stories about people going and hanging out in the hanging out on the beach and kind of cooking some dinner together. It's a really nice little film, and one that I find myself going, oh, that's really cute, that's nice. And sometimes you need that in a festival, just something that's just that nice little running time, something that, you know, you can watch, it's not going to stress you out, or, you know, it's not going to get in the way of certain things. And a film like this really hit a nice little sweet spot for me. It was a really pleasant surprise.
That's sometimes one of my favourite things about going to a festival, whatever. You've got the big hitters, the marquee films that you absolutely have to see. And then it's the little ones that, you know, oh, I've got a couple of hours to spare, I'll just catch something here, I'll catch something there. Oh, this looks all right, you know, whether it's a certain actor or director or even just sort of plot device that you find that sort of intrigues you whatever, you go to see it, and then you end up finding, you know, one of your favourite films of the festival. And it's always nice when something like that happens.
Yeah, for sure. So that film brought me on to, after that, a 2.5 hour epic, Under the Silver Lake. So Dallas, what was your take on Under Silver Lake?
Well, when I went in, I actually hadn't realised it was 2.5 hours, and for me, I didn't actually even really notice that it was. And I was very keen to see this film because it's written and directed by Dave Robert Mitchell, who made, for me, one of the best horror films of the last sort of 5 years, in It Follows. And for me, he's two for two. And I'm going to proviso this by, this film is not going to be for everyone. There's a moment basically around about 2 minutes in where a squirrel falls from the sky, splats on the ground, and then sort of looks up at Andrew Garfield's character and sort of does like a head tilt. And I almost half expected it to do something like shout Chaos Reigns or something like the fox from Antichrist or something. And immediately you know that, okay, this is not your typical film noir, because essentially it is a film noir. You've got this guy who's infatuated with a girl next door and suddenly she goes missing, and then he's involved in this plot and investigation to find out what happened to her, and then he meets all these strange characters. There's symbols, there's hidden codes and stuff like that, but the character of Sam himself is essentially the biggest deadbeat loser private detective since the dude put on his dressing gown back in The Big Lebowski. You know, you've got loads of sort of touch points. I called it in my review, Chinatown is filtered through the lens of Lynch's Mulholland Drive. It's a very, very odd film, but it won't appeal to everyone. Some people just won't get it. But if you do get it like I did, I thought it was fantastic and one of my favourite films I've seen this year so far.
I think for me, I learned a lot from watching a film like Inherent Vice a few years ago, where the first time I watched it, I found it infuriating. I was trying to second guess what was going on, looking ahead going, well, does this mean this? Oh, wait, that doesn't make sense. Wait, what was that thing earlier on? And when I caught Inherent Vice earlier last year, on a kind of repeat view into the cinema, I remember some advice Mike Schindler, one of the hosts on the network, gave me. He was like, just let the film kind of wash over you. That's the best way to watch Inherent Vice. And I watched it that way, and I really liked it a hell of a lot more. I was watching the performances. I was getting caught up in the vibe and the feel of the movie, as opposed to sort of trying to guess a kind of puzzle that might not actually make too much sense and actually might require more viewing time than needed. So I kind of passed out on that kind of advice to myself for this one, and I just watched it and I went, okay, whatever it will be will be. It literally has to make no sense whatsoever to me. I'm not bothered about that. I just want to enjoy myself and be interested, and I found that to be the case. I thought Andrew Garfield was great. I just thought it was a really interesting film, and it reminded me a lot of Southland Tales, Richard Kelly's follow-up to Donnie Darko in a way as well. And I just thought it was a really fascinating film, and I'm not sure if it's going to get a Blu-ray release actually here at all in the UK. It's obviously Mubi have got it, and sort of their focus is getting people to their streaming platform, sort of similar to Suspiria, no Blu-ray release. But for those of you who are kind of based listening to this that want it on Blu-ray and are thinking, well, I don't want to spend $9.99 on a movie subscription per month, you can actually get it from Amazon France along with Suspiria actually on Blu-ray for about 20 euros, 15 euros, so it could be well worth kind of checking that out, and it'll probably be here in your post in a few days. It's a real treat, and I'm very confused about what's going on with this film in America, but I hope it gets the release it deserves, and because it's going to find an audience and it's going to get a cult following for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it is getting a limited cinema release over here. I think sort of your sort of Curzon's, Everyman's, sort of film house, GFT and stuff like that will be.
Is it not just getting a release at the Prince Charles? Because I think I saw a sign that said like they were like going to be, it was going to be exclusively there and stuff. Unless I was wrong, yeah. So like Andrew Garfield's going to be there two nights doing a sort of Q&A and an introduction. But yeah, I think Prince Charles were kind of hammering it home as like the only place that you can see the film in the UK, which would be disappointing. I mean, it's a great place to see a film like that, but it shouldn't be the only place.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Maybe I was just going on the assumption of, you know, Mubi's release of Suspiria, which actually had quite a fairly, you know, it wasn't anything compared to, say, Avengers Infinity War or Aquaman or something, but it did have a decent-sized rollout across cinemas. You could find it in most cities, say, Edinburgh, Glasgow, Aberdeen, you know, London, all over the England and stuff like that. There was a fair amount of cinemas that actually did screen it, but so I just assumed that was going to be the case. So that'd be a shame if people don't get to see it in the cinemas. But again, I think it's a film which, like you say, could require multiple viewings. So therefore, if you have it available on a streaming service or DVD or Blu-ray, then that's good as well. But I mean, where was Andrew Garfield during the Glasgow Film Festival? That's what I want to know, eh? Why wasn't he up there promoting it there? That's what, eh? Come on, Andrew. Jeez.
I know, disappointing. So what did you catch after
Well, the only
that?
Other film that I caught after that was a small film that you're probably not really going to be interested in. It's something called Eighth Grade by Bo Burnham. Have you heard of that one? Or not familiar with it? No. Oh well, it's a film about a girl called Kayla who is just ending middle school. She's about to go into high school, and she does all these sort of motivational blogs or vlogs. Actually, technically they're called vlogs because it's a video blog on YouTube and stuff like that. But of course, we discover that the confident person that she portrays in these videos is maybe not quite the real person in, you know, real life. And it's about finding your place and finding your voice in the world. And yeah, I just thought it was a really lovely coming of age story. And with the sort of advancements in social media and stuff like that, I mean, I'm in my late 30s now, and sort of very glad watching that film that I didn't have social media at secondary school, because I think I didn't have a particularly bad, I enjoyed my time at secondary school, but I can imagine that it, from what you read in the papers and online and stuff like that, that school can be a lot tougher for kids these days with the pressure to perform and to be and act a certain way online as well as in person. So I think it's a film which could end up, and I think it's a film that should end up being screened in schools to teenagers and stuff like that, about the just the importance of and the of what social media can do to kids these days. And I think also to parents as well. I think it's important for parents to be aware of what their kids are being subjected to online as well. And you know, I was lucky enough to speak to the director and writer Bo Burnham at the Glasgow Film Festival about the film, and you know, we could probably listen to him now if you want.
Hi, hey, tell us the A24 project.
Hey.
How does it feel to have the film sort of come to international audiences and have sort of different age ranges and generations accept the film and embrace the film? Because you know, the technology, they may not be so familiar with it, but it's the struggles and experiences seem to be quite universal.
Yeah, it's great. You know, I mean, all we want is for people to connect with the film and see the film. So the fact that we're here with, you know, the little weird film we made, you know, a year and a half ago in upstate New York with a bunch of eighth graders is incredible. So, yeah, we just hope people can continue to connect with it. It's just like it's just a privilege. It's sort of surreal.
Yeah, and in your stand-up, which is sort of related to this, you mentioned about always the need to perform on social media. How do they think this film will help people sort of learn that they need to sort of balance the online and offline sides of their personality?
Yeah, you know, the film really isn't trying to instruct people on what to do or how to feel. Like, hopefully, you know, things like that, you know, it can hopefully inspire a conversation to have about that, but I didn't want the film to sort of finger wag or tell you what to do. Or I think there's a little too much commentary on the internet and not enough just portrayal of how it feels. So the film really is just trying to sort of portray the subjective experience of what it means for this person to be online. And then if you want to draw your own conclusions based on that, that's great. But, you know, the film, I don't want the film to have that conversation for you.
Absolutely. And finally, you've said that you'd like to work with Elsie again. Could we potentially see a, like, Before Sunrise style trilogy where we revisit her in 12th grade or college,
maybe.
Sophomore year?
The truth is, she's like a kid and I want to let her live her life. You know, I don't want to like immediately have her thinking about the next film she's in. And then, or you get the boyhood effect where then like the kid becomes a photographer because they were on set so much they've of course developed an interest in photography. You know what I mean? Like, so I gotta like let her like live her life, and then, you know, in 4 years we'll check back in. If we want to do something, we'll do it. But the kid deserves some space.
Great. Thanks very much.
Take it easy.
So yeah, that was Bo Burnham, and yeah, it was a really nice guy, you know, very warm and opening about his film. You know, just really happy that, you know, the small film that he's made is now finally getting the chance to be with international audiences. You know, we unfortunately didn't have time to touch upon the fact that he will be going up against Avengers Endgame in the UK, but I think there will still be an audience for this. And I think even though it's set in a US school and, you know, it's got the technology, I think it will find an audience because the experiences that they have are pretty universal, and everyone's has gone through, you know, the pains and the terrors of growing up in school and stuff like that. So I think it will find its voice and its audience in the UK as well.
I've got to ask as well, like, obviously this was your first time covering a red carpet. What was that experience like for you personally?
It was surprisingly nerve-wracking, which is odd because I've compared Q&As at the Edinburgh Film Festival. But I don't know, for being on the other side of the carpet or something, I was slightly nervous, but he was great and very sort of warm and welcoming and sort of took all the questions on board and sort of gave great answers. And I was delighted with how it went. And yeah, so that's our second A24 guest that we've had on Filibuster and the A24 project now. So long may it continue. And if anyone else wants to come on board and speak to us, then we're more than welcome to, more than willing to listen to what you have to say.
Oh, for sure. I mean, when we've got Millie Shapiro, Bo Burnham, everyone else should be like, even like Greta Gerwig, Sofia Coppola, they'd be like, well, if it's good enough for those guys, yeah, why haven't we been invited on? So your invites will be sent out, we'll slide into your DMs with some links and we'll arrange a Skype call someday.
Yeah, no, so I think Greta Gerwig, you know, if she wants to debut Little Women at the London Film Festival and wants to sit down for a chat to talk about that, Lady Bird, you know, all that, yeah, I'm down for that. Greta, the offer is there. Yeah.
we'll be getting that done. So I kind of wrapped up my festival with a double bill on the Wednesday. Fugi, sort of directed by Angeliska Smutskina. I'm probably butchering that name as well.
Oh, that sounded about right.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of following up her Polish film, The Lure, with Fugi, which was a film that kind of, its brief synopsis sort of intrigued me about a mother that returns from sort of staying in the woods that has lost her memory and tries to put her life back together. A very atmospheric movie, but nothing that kind of, it just, I don't know whether it was me or the film, but I was sort of in the middle of the festival. I'd been kind of going back and forth to Glasgow. I remember just sitting down to watch this movie going, I'm just kind of not in the mood for this movie. And as it was kind of unfolding, I was like, okay, this is all right, I enjoy it fine enough. And it was a fine enough film, but just one that just didn't kind of click for me at all. You know, good performances, but nothing that great. And one that I think was quite a disappointment, considering how highly I thought of the Lure. A bit of a disappointment, but you know, it's worth maybe catching one day if you're looking to perhaps add on a 52 films by women to it. It's fine, but not that great.
Yeah, no, I did have a ticket for that one, but unfortunately, it was on at a time that unfortunately clashed with my red carpet interview, so I had to skip out on that one, sadly. But you know, if it appears on Netflix down the line or something, then yeah, I'll try and get, because it was one of the ones that did sort of intrigue me, and I can't realize it was by the same woman who did The Lure, which I still haven't seen. But it was one, I think it was it at the previous Glasgow Film Festival or was it Edinburgh, but it was one that really intrigued me from its concept. So.
And the final film I caught of the festival, which I was expecting it to be High Life, I was thinking it must be High Life, what else could it be? It was a surprise movie, and that was Gloria Bell, starring Julianne Moore. So an interesting amount of A24 films that were at the film festival. And yeah, it was a really enjoyable kind of film. And It's one of those things that's got a fantastic soundtrack. It's definitely got a built-in audience for a movie like this. You know, an older crowd that perhaps see their relationships in life underrepresented in cinema. Julianne Moore puts in a great performance. And for people that are a fan of middle-aged couples having sex scenes, then this is the film for you. You know, you're certainly getting your kicks here. So it was a really funny film, interesting. I thought the direction was a little bit damp compared to something Sebastian Lelou's done before, when I think of films like A Fantastic Woman, for example. But it's a film that's going to be really enjoyable. You're going to have a good time watching this. It might not stick with you the way it would most films, but I think people will enjoy this when they catch it, and it'll come out in the UK in June time.
Yeah, no, I look forward to reviewing it in future episode of the A24 project. And were you able to give it a fair shake of the stick considering your crushing disappointment that it was not High Life?
Yeah, I was, because it was still felt like, oh, I got an A24 film, and it was a trailer I really liked when it came out a month or two ago, and I was like, oh, this looks really good fun. So when it came on, I was like, okay, it's not High Life, but I'm happy enough with this. I wasn't even sort of on my other choice of movies. I thought it would maybe have been Greta or Madeline, but no, Gloria Bell was a real treat there. And yeah, it was a good fun. It's the type of film you sometimes just get a real kick from catching at a festival.
Excellent. Well, I ended my Glasgow Film Festival, not with a film per se, but another podcast. I don't know if we're allowed to talk about other podcasts which aren't on the Nerd Party Network on here, but I attended the Empire Live podcast. It's something they've done previously. We've both sort of seen them at the Edinburgh Film Festival, and they sort of do sort of milestone events, sort of every 100 or every 50 episodes. They do another one in London, but they bring their podcast show on the road, and they sort of do their live sort of news stories, review sections, ask the fans for questions, and then also interview a special guest. And the special guest this time was Sir Michael Palin, who was there at the Glasgow Film Festival talking about his film Final Ascent, where he narrates the story of the Scottish sort of mountain climber Hamish McInnes, an 88-year-old man sort of looking back over his life sort of living and working on the mountains and hills of Scotland. And it sort of led to some interesting sort of facts that Hamish was actually one of the people who helped them on Holy Grail in finding locations and stuff like that. And apparently he built the Bridge of Doom that they have to try and answer the questions to get over and stuff like that. So that was a great interview with him, sort of reminiscing about his time, you know, becoming in Monty Python, and also sort of his travels and stuff like that. So that was great. It was great to see sort of the sort of chemistry and camaraderie between sort of Chris Helm and James on the podcast. And I got to ask a question, so I'll be making a cameo guest appearance on a rival podcast, unfortunately, this week. So you can check that one out, I'm sure. And of course,
not content with being on two podcasts.
No, then. I want to go for three this week. I thought I better go for three. And if you know, if you're ever attending one of the Scottish podcasts again, a good way to be able to get onto it is bribe them with sweets or Iron Brew flavoured products. So yeah, top tip.
That's how you got on here originally. Absolutely, Dallas. I came in one day and it was like, there was a phone number attached to some Iron Brew.
Yeah, and that's Iron Brew, spelled IRNBRU, not Iron Brew, which because you know, you don't want the unofficial branded stuff. You know, it's you know, if it's not made from Gerda's, it's not proper.
Absolutely. One day we'll take our podcast on the show and perform in some town or something. I'm sure there'll be people queuing out the door for tickets for that.
Well, you know, if Edinburgh or Glasgow are doing any more A24 films at the festivals in the future and they want a live introduction, we could record a live podcast. And if Iron Brew want to sponsor it, then boom, synergy, everything together. if A24 then want to send candles or First Reformed hats for us to wear and give away, then, you know, so be it. Yeah. Let's do it.
Send us the candles, you cowards. We'll get them one day. You know, we're sending people your way to download your films. Just send me a poxy candle.
Yeah, or even, you know, just one candle or all six. You know, and the hat. I need the hat. Completely. I need that hat.
So obviously we have caught a lot of films in the past kind of week and a half, 2 weeks at the film festival, but we still keep in our 52 films by women recommendations coming to you. So Dallas, what is your recommendation this week?
Well, I am going to recommend something which, as since I was at the Glasgow Film Festival and working for most of the time, I haven't really got to the cinema much outside of the festival, but you know, Netflix is always there and is very handy for bus journeys and train journeys. And I found a documentary called Shirkers. Now, this is written, directed, and stars Sandy Tan. And it's about a woman exploring the events surrounding a film that she and her friends began making around about 20 years ago in Singapore. She had written and directed a film called Shirkers. And it was being directed by a Frenchman that they knew. And he was sort of working in sort of the university and sort of schools that they were in. And his name was Philip Che. And basically, you know, his name was George Cardona, sorry. And he was this sort of guy who basically talked the talk, walked the walk. He said he could get, you know, equipment, he'd be able to get them locations and stuff like that. And he did all the filming for it. And then what happened was, when they finally completed the filming for the film, he vanished with all the footage. And, you know, these girls were just utterly devastated that they'd spent, you know, their entire summer working on this film and someone had taken it from them and they were never able to complete it. And this documentary is essentially, you know, as with all great documentaries, there's a bit of a twist, and it's about Sandy sort of trying to reconnect with the film, trying to find out what happened to it, what happened to George, talking with the people who made the film, who worked on the film. And it's really a sort of fascinating sort of journey into what makes a film. Is it the final product, or is it the experience of making it? Because everyone who worked on it, because they didn't have a final version of it, has a slightly different idea of what the film was and what the film was going to be. And yeah, I don't want to spoil, you know, what happens in the end or whatever, but it's definitely worth a watch. It's a fascinating film, and it's kind of got a sort of, I'm not thinking of Dogtooth, what's the one, what am I thinking of? The one where the guy goes in his Catfish, not Dogtooth, Catfish, that's the one. Yeah, it's kind of got a sort of Catfish vibe where you think you're kind of watching one thing, but it turns out to be something else. And with this sort of relationship between certain people, it's kind of got that vibe, but it's definitely worth a watch. I was thoroughly entertained and also intrigued as to what was going on. So it's, yeah, highly recommended, and you can catch that one on Netflix at the moment. So
I'm going to have to go with something very different to that, and I'm really keen to see that film. So I'm trying to keep it within the sort of, I'm going to go with the Glasgow vibe today. So we've had a Glasgow Film Festival chat, and it would be impossible not to mention a Lynn Ramsey movie, and I've gone for We Need to Talk About Kevin, which is one of the best films, I think, of sort of the millennium, really. And it's got one of our friends, you know, one of our great loves between us, Tilda Swinton, and what a film this is. I think it's Lynn Ramsey's best film, and she's got a really exciting and diverse back catalogue. I know everyone's got a different favourite film of hers, whether it's Ratcatcher, Morven Callor, You Were Never Really Here, which was on so many people's top films of the year list. But We Need to Talk About Kevin. It is one of my favourite ones. It's absolutely one of the most terrifying films I perhaps watched. It's uncomfortable, it's challenging to watch, but Lynn Ramsey delivers the sort of movie you watch and you think, why has this director not had so many different films thrown at her over the years? You know, I know she picks and chooses her movies, but this woman should be being offered everything, whether it's a big blockbuster movie or an up-and-coming script. She is one of the best directors in the world, and this film certainly showcases that, and sort of her Glasgow dark spirit, I think.
You know, I haven't seen this film since I saw it at the cinema first time round, and this is a compliment in that it's one of those films which I'm not sure if I want to see again. It's so, like, on the nerve and so disturbing. You could probably sort of classify it in that sort of realm with, like, you know, like Requiem for a Dream, which are just so traumatic to watch that even though you know you're watching a fantastic film, it's not something which you... It's not something you'd stick on a Friday night when you want to chill out after work, that's for sure. So it's, yeah, a great film and great performances all round. Yeah, Ezra Miller was a real find in that. I think that was the first thing I'd ever really seen him in. And yeah, Tilda Swinton, as always, and John C. Reilly as well. Yeah, all great. And yeah, you just sort of, you see films like that and wish that Lynn Ramsey was able, or just was, you know, making them more regularly.
Yeah, for sure. So we've got given you a lot of films that you can maybe catch in cinema soon, or have maybe been out in your neck of the woods, or you can import them from Amazon France. So kind of lots of films here from the Glasgow Film Festival that's given us plenty of food for thought. So it sounds like it's been another great year, and hopefully they'll have us back again next year. And it was a real pleasure to be invited and to see some great films. So thank you very much to Glasgow for having us.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, every year they are fantastic. They're very welcoming. There's, you know, Alison and Alan basically somehow managed to introduce every single film at the festival, every single screening. The volunteers are great. The press team, Ruth and Katie, were great at sorting out the red carpet interview. And, you know, they've always got a great lineup of films. And, you know, last year they did such a great job when under horrendous circumstances with The Beast from the East, that I'm glad they had a much easier run of it this year. And yeah, we look forward to, they've already sort of tweeted me saying, I can't wait to have you back next year at #GFF20. So yeah, let's
for do sure
it.
So until next time, next week we'll be discussing going from independent and kind of original films to discussing, what is it, the 22nd Marvel movie, where we'll be back to sort of chat about that next week. So Captain Marvel, are you looking forward to catching that this weekend?
I am absolutely looking forward to that, and I have no issue with a female superhero leading her own film, especially within the Marvel universe. And yeah, all the sort of internet man babies, cry babies can just jog on.
Yeah, exactly. So join us next week on the Ultra Woke Filibuster podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Lee_Nostromo. Where can people find you, Dallas?
They can find me on Twitter at @ChampCelluloid.
And join us next week. Until then, bye.
Bye. Okay.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.